On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York, and the host of On the Ground.
I am so delighted today to have as our guest On the Ground, that for the second time, because he is a man with so much information for us. He is Joseph de Meyer and the UN representative, the Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues, and a lot more. We are celebrating today the United Nations January 24th, International Day of Education. Our entire On the Ground podcast is going to focus on education. And we have Joseph here because he created the NGO Committee on Education. And we will talk about that later, how you can benefit by being affiliated with it. But thank you for being with us today, Joseph.
It's always a great pleasure for me to be interviewed by you. I'm looking forward to this, but it's really a very, very important issue in human life. You know, I just recall former Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, he was very much a proponent of education. And he often said that when you ask people all over the world, when you ask parents, what is it they find the most important for their children? All these parents will tell you the education of our children.
Yes.
That's what matters the most to parents. And that is so correct. As you said, I revived the NGO Committee on Education. Sylvan Barnett was the president of International Rotary. And when the nations began, International Rotary, and he was president at the time, as well as the Red Cross, they were one of the first NGOs representing civil society that were invited by the United Nations to contribute. 20 years ago, when I became a UN representative for the Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues, in typical UN jargon, the acronym in SPSSI, S-P-S-S-I.
Very SPSSI, good.
I met Sylvan Barnett. He was working in a little side office in the church center. Impressive gentleman. I'll never forget him. He mentioned, don't forget the three P's, you know, the letter P at the United Nations, and that is patience, perseverance, and power. Yeah, those are the three main words that you need to adhere to. Be patient. It's like water dripping on a stone. Persevere in your mission, but also empower yourself with it. And that's something that civil society definitely needs to do.
Yes.
It is the task of civil society to represent the people at the United Nations there. So let me go back then to the NGO Committee on Education.
Yes.
Sylvan Barnett passed away, and I took over his mantle, you could say. But that NGO committee was dormant, not active. But I found some very good people in civil society representing education NGOs, and we revived that committee. And now it's called the NGO Committee on Education, Learning, and Literacy. So people who are interested in joining this NGO committee, go to the website of the NGO Committee on Education, Learning, and Literacy, and join us.
Yes, and you know that we have show notes that everyone can read, and we'll have that URL there. So those of you who want to join, please do. You'll be able to do it very easily from the link. And Joseph, tell us some of the benefits of joining that organization.
The benefit is this. You meet like-minded people who understand and deeply empathize with the importance of education in our lives. And it is a lifelong experience, education. It starts, actually, I think it starts already in the womb, because inside the womb of our mothers, we already pick up signals from the outside world and we learn, communicate with it. And that's what education trains us, how to position ourselves in this world. So let me now make a citation of a description of education. And it was made, it was written by two exceptional academic educational scholars, Will and Ariel Durant. You may not recall them, but in the 50s and 60s, these were little giants in the academic world, and they wrote about history. They don't make them like that anymore. You know what I mean, huh?
Yes, we do.
But in their book, The Lessons of History, published in 1968, Will and Ariel Durant, and I'll give them a voice from beyond the grave, they had the following to say about education. Education is a transmission of civilization. Civilization, that's civil society, that's us, the people. Civilization is not inherited. It has to be learned and earned by each generation anew. Yeah, it's not a given that we know about civilization. We need to learn it. And we also need to earn, you know, to become truly members of civil society. Consider education not as the painful accumulation of facts and dates and range, not merely the necessary preparation of the individual to earn his keep in the world. In other words, you know, how to get a job.
To get a job. So,
but it is the transmission of our mental, moral, technical, and aesthetic, the arts heritage, as fully as possible to as many as possible, the transmission of those accomplishments. And it is for the enlargement of man's and woman's understanding, control, embellishment, enrichment, and enjoyment of life. Enjoyment of life, the pursuit of happiness. You may not see it, but I'm standing in front of my fireplace, and there is a crest with a motto. It's my personal motto. And give me permission to mention it. Is it all right?
Yes, please do.
It says in Latin, otium cum dignitate. That means leisure with dignity. Leisure with dignity. And that's what we can learn through education. Yeah, we work all day or night, but then we have time to relax, to enjoy life, pursue happiness, to have a leisure time, but in a dignified way. And that, I believe, is the essence of this quotation. If men and women are fortunate, they will, before they die, gather up as much as they can of their civilized heritage and transmit it to their children. And to their final breath, they will be grateful for their inexhaustible legacy, knowing that it is our nourishing mother and our lasting life. That is, I think, is the essence of to learn that at school as children, and also continuing it throughout our life. Maybe a bit old-fashioned, but
it is old-fashioned. It's also inspirational, and it's also futuristic all at the same time. Because what it really is a definition, a livable definition, not only of education, but the concept that we're all educators. Because when we think about education, we think of getting the information, being the student. And that's so important. But we are also the teachers. So if you're talking about transferring knowledge about civilization, not only are you talking about the teachers, but you're talking about everyone. And the older, the better. Because we are the transmitters of tradition. So having said that, I'm going to put you on the spot. Now, this is your fault, not my fault. So the Education Day at the United Nations is about AI. Now, UNESCO has chosen the topic of the year. And what they've chosen is how artificial intelligence can be used to teach and, in fact, make a better world. And in fact, to fulfill some of the sustainable development goals. My vision of what you're saying as you're talking has been a human being a very humanistic approach to
Yes.
education. And the question is, can AI transmit what civilization means? Is that possible? Now, I'm just going to meld that with you being the United Nations representative of the Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues. There's a psychological question here too. If you're learning from a artificial intelligence about what a civilization is, does it have the same psychological impact when you're listening to somebody who lived it? I told you, it's not my fault. I'm throwing it over to you.
Wonderful, wonderful said. You put your finger right on the pulse, because that is the thing about artificial intelligence. Yeah. It's not a human, it's a machine, it's a computer. And it has an unbelievable access to information and data. But what that data means, what that information means, and what its purpose is supposed to be, that we cannot give out of our hands. That has to remain in the hands of well-educated people, human beings. Because I think that is the risk of artificial intelligence, that we depend too much on these algorithms, you know, which are amazing, no question about it. But you know, we're also humans. And let's face it, to be human means also not to be perfect.
Yes.
Right? It's the ability to admit and to live with our imperfections. And if AI pretends to be perfect, we need to be very careful about that. But I think it is a very useful tool. You know, this is nothing new. New technologies have always come about in human history, the lessons of history. And humans need to learn with those new technologies. We learned how to learn how to live with a telegraph, and then with a telephone, and then with radio, and then with television, and then with computers. And now we need to learn to live with artificial intelligence. That is a very challenging, but I think we're capable of doing it. Now, you mentioned also the psychological aspect.
Yes.
And again, to go back into history, and in this case, my own personal history, and I'll be very personal, I like to call myself a product of the Maria Montessori educational system. I started that at the age of three.
Montessori schools start in preschool, as it did with you, yes.
Yes. But I'll tell you now something about my family. And if you don't mind, I'll do it over the radio. Everyone.
All over the world. Go ahead.
Yeah, because, but it points something out about education. So my father, after the war, he went through a psychological challenging period. And both my parents are from prominent, originally Catholic families. And my older siblings were put on Catholic schools.
Yes.
But I call it thanks to his psychological self-examination and all that, he decided to put me on that Montessori school.
Mm-hmm. You were the youngest,
now,
obviously.
Somehow that got back to the cardinal of the Catholic Church in the Netherlands. And he summoned my father to his palace. Yeah. He said, how can you, such a prominent Catholic family, how can you put your child on a school system that is meant for imbeciles, idiots? Seriously.
Yes.
My father made the visit very short, and he kept me on that school, of course. But what I'm pointing out with you is this, and I think it's an underlying challenge for education. And I talk about that now and then with representatives of UNESCO at the United Nations, who mainly agree with me. And that is, education makes people smarter, right?
Yes.
And they become critical thinkers. And therefore, they begin to question
that's dangerous.
What's going on in society. And the authorities, they don't like that. Yeah, because they're being challenged by critically thinking people, educated people. So I think there is often, in particularly in authoritarian states,
Yes.
more or less recently, to want to influence education, to suppress it, or also to manipulate it for propagandist purposes. And this is where another danger of artificial intelligence comes in.
Yes.
Because who controls the artificial intelligence?
Those who have the input.
Yes. And I'm sure the governments will want to get their hands on that. And I, you know, personally, I'm not against that. You know, governments can be good also. But, you know, we need to be very careful that artificial intelligence does not fall into the wrong hands.
That's why I'm actually very grateful. I had some of the same reactions when I saw the focus of the International Day of Education. And then I became very grateful about it, because I believe that when things are not discussed, that's when the issues come up. When the pros and cons are not revealed, that's when the issues come up. And for our own NGOs, because after all, GNEC, Global NGO Executive Committee, is devoted to the education of NGOs. And one of the things they're going to have to know is how to handle artificial intelligence and how it could make things faster, easier, everything from fundraising to if they're in the world of education. So before I leave, I just want to tell you that we will also have on our show notes how to find the United Nations Associated Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues, if that's something of great interest to you as it is to me. We already said the NGO Committee on Education. And one of the things I want to end, the thing I want to end with, Joseph, right now is this. You are adept at putting educational conferences together. We have a lot of NGOs. This is a practical question now, from the theoretical and moral to the practical. We have a lot of NGOs listening now that are, they have a task in front of them. They want to put together a conference, and that is to educate their members on whatever their mission happens to be. So what would you suggest as a mentor of somebody for the first time putting together an educational conference on their topic, whatever that may be?
A very good question. You know, I often mention what I consider to be the civil and moral imperative of civil society. And that means that, you know, it is time for civil society, we the people, to address these moral and civil challenges in our lives. And I think it's very important that NGOs, you know, are active in that field and make their and proposals. Now, on a practical level, NGOs can do that through the NGO committees. Yeah, the NGO committees have access, and this is where GNEC comes in.
Yes.
Yeah, because GNEC can provide these platforms for NGOs to submit proposals for conferences and workshops and parallel events at the United Nations. So I think that GNEC, in collaboration with the NGO committees, can provide that practical assistance. Also, I want you to know that the NGO Committee on Education, Learning and Literacy, the literacy includes what language to use at the United Nations. Because the United Nations has, as you well know, its own language,
all its
say.
Own. Yes, sir.
And NGOs need to learn that language. And by that, they can navigate the United Nations system. So another reason to join the NGO Committee on Education is how to learn that language, but also to find out who to speak with. And I want to go back to our GNEC function, Adrian, and this is why I like these podcasts, to alert NGOs, contact with GNEC.
Absolutely.
We are a platform by which you can achieve these venues, by which you can promote your NGOs, and especially in this case, the NGOs that have to do with education.
And I'm going to make a special announcement now as we conclude with Joseph, because we do have another esteemed guest, also a member of our board. But special announcement, we have just formed the Outreach and Partnership Committee, and we have a wonderful reporter. It's called the NGO Reporter. What we are looking to do is do webinars, to do educational conferences, to meet with each other, know each other, collaborate, and we're creating a directory. And for those of you listening, you will be receiving an email asking you questions about your mission, about the best contact information, and more important than anything, what you would like us to do for you. So please watch for that. This is very real and very exciting. But this conversation has been terrific. Thank you so much, Joseph. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Are you interested in high-quality online SDG education programs at no cost and with a flexible schedule? Through the Global NGO Education Committee, GNEC, and Rutgers Preparatory School, the Innovation Academy is offering a variety of programs that address both local and global challenges that should be of interest to you. It provides an NGO a virtual platform for online courses and programs from top schools and other organizations designed for every grade level from world-class educators. Take advantage of this amazing opportunity to expand your knowledge, be connected, be inspired by NGO leaders and educators. You will get all the information you need at the Innovation Academy at GNEC, GNEC. NGO. I am so thrilled today that I am going to be able to introduce you to yet another member of the GNEC Executive Committee. His name is Richard Jordan. He is very involved with the United Nations, and he is associated with the United Nations in the last 35 years. So we have a lot to discuss today, Richard. I just want to throw myself right into the issue of this new day, which is January 24th, International Day of Education for the United Nations. And how do you see this? I mean, you have held committees, you have educated communities. This is something that's not new to you. How do you see educating about the United Nations?
Well, thank you so much for hosting this very wonderful podcast. Salute you for this terrific work for so many of us on GNEC, the Global NGO Executive Committee, that is supporting the Department of Global Communications at the United Nations. But the best way for me to describe my take on the International Day for Education is to go back into yesteryear. And my major in college was Latin and Greek because I wanted to teach. I wanted to teach in high school.
That makes sense.
In the 19th, yes, it made perfect sense to me, except I didn't realize that when I graduated, there were fewer and fewer students who wanted to study Latin and Greek. So that's not a good formula for success. I decided to take a hiatus and got a job at the NYU library in order to get free tuition to pursue my PhD.
Very
but
well.
I loved my library work so much that I decided, well, this really may not be the way to go to teach Latin and Greek. So I worked for 5 years in the library, educated myself on how to out of print books to other universities. My goal was always to come every day to the United Nations, which I thought was a giant universe, probably at that time, maybe 180 countries. How could you go wrong not want to be there every day? I started my own path in the United Nations. And my own path was 5 years of sitting and listening and not understanding anything.
Navigating the UN is really quite a question mark.
I didn't understand the language. I didn't understand the code words. I didn't understand what was being done. So after 5 years, finally, I really did understand it, teaching myself. No one taught me. Because of that, eventually, 10 years ago, I started a not only in-person experience of the United Nations for 4 to 5 weeks in the summer for students from the People's Republic of China. So about 10 students would come and I would go through a daily routine, taking them to meetings, introducing them to people that I knew in the hallways. And that didn't matter if they were ambassadors, former presidents of the General Assembly, or the cafeteria workers. Everybody at the United Nations is interesting, believe me. So you talk to everybody. So I was able, with these students, to create a program where I acted as a sports coach. A sports coach, basically with elite athletes, will show you how, or show the athletes, in this case the students, how they can have a competitive advantage, just a little tiny competitive advantage. And in China, that's very important. So the students were absolutely wonderful. COVID then hit, and I went to virtual teaching, which meant I got up at 4 a.m. every day. I watched UN videos from Geneva, Switzerland, another duty station of the United Nations. I watched as of UN meetings, side events, everything I possibly could. And my course, even in person, had the idea of teaching for 2050, not 1950,
Very
which is
futuristic.
what we are in right now.
Yes.
Thank you. And so what did I do? There was no curriculum, no tests, no grades.
That sounds like
What?
a good course. I'd like to take that course.
Oh, it was really popular. And one page of homework. And if you didn't like my homework assignment, write a page about something that you really want to talk about and educate not the other students, them too, but not just them, me also. I learned a great deal from my students. So it was a dialogue always. Each week on Friday, I would email the students 10 ebooks, electronic digital books that the UN publishes on an ongoing basis all the time. And by the time the course was over, they had a digital library of 50 books.
Yes.
Mike McGill, my English teacher in the sophomore year of high school, told the class, if you don't have a collection of 50 books, hard copy, by the time you graduate from high school, we haven't done a good job of educating you. So my goal was 50 ebooks, and that's exactly what I did. Then I made myself available, and I still have students emailing me for recommendations to graduate school. Some of my students have gone to Oxford, some have gone to Cambridge, others to many different types of universities in the United States. One was a rocket scientist, like Father Brian Muzas, our treasurer at GNEC. Another is in astronomy at the University of Queensland in Australia. So my idea of teaching Latin and Greek never materialized, but my desire to know how to follow the trail like an indigenous person, like a Sherpa going up a mountain, guiding mountain climbers. That's what I became. So what I wanted to do didn't work out, thank goodness.
Well, I can say, being in meetings with you, that you are a repository of information. And unfortunately for the United Nations, you have to have that background. So people coming in from right away, fresh, very difficult for them to understand the navigation. But this is one of the jobs of GNEC. And with you on the board, frankly, it is one of your jobs for GNEC. So I want everyone to know that we're going to be issuing a directory where you can speak with each other, but you can also speak to mentors, and you can reach mentors like Richard Jordan and be part of the information that he has, so that you are not left having to sit for 5 years trying to figure this out, which really can happen. So we are a major, and honestly, Richard and a few others are a real look at what the past, what you need to know in the past to understand what they're doing right now, as well as the words, the jargon, the language. I do want to remind you from our first part of our interview with Joseph de Meyer that the NGO Committee on Education is actually called Learning, Education, and Literacy. And that literacy is the language of the UN, just as Richard is talking about. So we have a lot of rich resources for you at GNIC. All right. Now, let's go on to something else. The International Day that's happening on January 24th, and you will have the show notes. You'll be able to reach and know more about the International Council for Caring Committees that Richard is involved with. You'll know more about all the other committees we're talking about and GNEC itself, but you'll also be able to register for this International Day. Richard, this International Day is about artificial intelligence and education. That's the focus. UNESCO has selected that focus, and they have said it very clearly because they believe that in order to change the future, we have to understand AI and learning that way. You're the educator. What's your take on that?
Well, being a futurist, let me share with the audience that it's now the 21st that we're recording this, but tomorrow in Davos at the World Economic Forum meeting, the UN Secretary General is going to speak about the dangers of unregulated artificial intelligence. Now, there are many, many digital courses that are free to anyone. Now, you don't have to be an NGO if you want to know about the history of sustainable development, any topic really, climate change, whatever it is. The UN has, through, for example, Food and Agriculture Organization, the International Telecommunications Union, the International Labor Organization, the UN Institute for Training and Research, all of these entities in the UN system have quote, quote, e-academies, where you can actually take courses free of charge, obtain beautiful certificates with the UN logo. You can actually have a UN logo on your certificate. But the most interesting thing about these courses, I can see the way that artificial intelligence is being used in presenting the material. So that, yes, this is the very interesting thing. So if you can deal with the artificial intelligence, you will receive in your examinations in these courses, you will receive a recognition so that you can actually more easily identify the right answer. It's very interesting. So I find myself at times talking to the robot or to the voice and making comments and then realizing, oh, I'm sorry, that's not a person, that's a robot. But this is the way that I see the United Nations system moving into artificial intelligence and education. So it's not just UNESCO, it's the UN system that is developing these digital courses. And they are tough. They are hard. But if you get your certificate, you will feel a sense of accomplishment like none other than that you have ever had. And these certificates, if you upload them onto your resumes, this is your new competitive advantage. You will understand the nature of artificial intelligence in the way that you have educated yourself.
So let's go back to your expertise of being able to navigate the system. Everybody who's just listened to you is thinking, I want one of those courses. Is there one repository, one URL they can go to? Do we have to know every single different type of course and who's offering it?
Well, that's a very useful question, and it's essential. The acronym UN means usually not. So if you think there is, yes, if you think there is one repository, usually not. So the best thing to do is in a Google search, simply put in the name of a program or agency like the ITU, and after that, put E Academy, Electronic Academy, Digital Academy, and you will come up with the website for that organization. But there is no one place to go. UNITAR has perhaps the most useful of the training courses, but UN Environment Program, Food and Agriculture Organization, International Telecommunications. World Intellectual Property Organization has really tough courses. They are for real specialists. But if this is where your curiosity and your professional interests lie, then simply put in ITU Academy, E Academy, FAO Academy, and you're going to come up in one or two listings of on a Google page the place to go. But I can't give you one specific repository.
Now, right here, I'm going to give GNIC a little bit of a plug because, as I mentioned, we do have an outreach and partnership committee. We are creating a directory. Richard Jordan, our guest, has a lot to do with that directory. Eventually, we will be able to know what your missions are, and we will be able to either create courses or garner at least an ebook with the information that you could use for courses that are of interest to you already given at the United Nations so that we don't have to always reinvent the wheel. But that is our job, and that is to support you. Now we're going to take a little bit of a break. And when I come back, I'm going to speak to Richard about a worldwide student competition on architecture that I'm particularly interested in because it has to do with his International Council for Caring Communities, but it also has to do with education and educating people so that they can meet in one way or another some of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Don't you guys go anywhere. If you're interested in civil society and NGOs, please subscribe free to the NGO Reporter. We're gathering perspectives from the global NGO community worldwide and celebrating 30 years of connecting NGOs, the media, and civil society networks worldwide to the work of GNIC, its constituents, the NGOs, and the topical issues related to all UN SDGs. So, how do you get your free copy? Well, simply go to gnic.ngo. And you know, you can also submit articles for the reporter. And if you do, you will be read by UN media and those interested in civil society, other NGOs. It's certainly worth doing. So please contact our editors and our staff at GNIC, GNEC.NGO. We're back with Richard Jordan. You know that he is one of our esteemed board members at GNEC. You know that he is associated with the International Council for Caring Committees. But now you know that for an agonizing 5 years, he has spent his time unraveling the navigation of the United Nations. So he is our chief, let's say, understander of the UN. With him, things can become more usual, more accessible. That's what we're interested in. Now, one of the things you told me, Richard, that actually surprised me, we were chatting before the show, is that your organization was involved with a student competition on architecture. Tell us a little bit about that, because what I would like our listeners to think about is what they could put together. I will tell you that GNEC's competition called the Hackathon for technology solving some of the Sustainable Development Goals is one of our most successful projects. This sounds parallel, and it's possible that some of the NGOs listening would like to do something like that that supports their own different mission. So tell us about the student competition on architecture.
Yes, well, thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity. The genius of Diane Davis in putting this together, it's not something that you can whip up in a very short time. So what Diane did in the International Council for Caring Communities, Diane created every 2 years this worldwide student architecture competition. I had a pseudonym. I was Jane Ross. That was my pseudonym because all of the architectural boards, and there were four for each entry, had to come by mail or FedEx or UPS. Mm-hmm. From universities and colleges all around the world. And we had a very strict a set of guidelines, including having students write an affidavit that they'd received no professional help. Now, whether now AI would be considered professional help, I'm not sure.
I'm sure they're going to discuss that. Yes.
Yes. But the other thing is that we've always found sponsors, companies, real estate companies, didn't matter, who wanted to provide really good prize money. So we not only had the individual and team, but we had $10,000 first prize, $5,000 second prize, $2,500 honorable mention. So the judges got together, went over, looked at all of the boards, the entries, and finally narrowed things down to maybe five, and then chose three winners and perhaps a fourth, another for honorable mention, two honorable mentions, and we split the prize money. So when you simply provide an ability for member states to highlight what they're doing,
Yes.
it's very possible to go as far as you want. If you can highlight in the best of possible ways without a scorecard what member states are doing, that is the key
Yes.
to working at the United Nations. And that's what I did for 9,200 days in person until COVID, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. It was very interesting, and I had my own place where I sat all the time so that people could find me and ask me questions. Yes.
So I'm going to ask you, and we'll conclude here, Richard. For the day, for the International Day of Education, we know it's AI, but you're a futurist. Let's go to 2026. If you could create the focus of the International Day of Education for 2026, what would it be?
For 2026, my idea would be in a new set of goals. 2026 is the perfect date. 2026 will start to see the articulation of a new set of global goals because the SDGs, the 17 of them, expire in 2030. So what I would do is I would put the title Education as the fulcrum, the pivot point for a new set of global goals. And those would be social goals. We've done environment and social, we've done the three pillars of sustainable development, resilient development, and the actual term sustainable development goes back to 1704 in Germany, called, and it was called long-lastingness. Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect. In home economics in the 1950s, you learned how to, everybody, whether you were a boy or a girl, you learned how to make things last longer.
Yes.
That's the idea. So 2026, education as the focal point for a new set of global goals, because it will take 4 years before those negotiations actually finish. And the other thing about the UN, I can say everything takes longer than you think. The UN is like negotiations at the UN is like watching paint dry, with one difference: paint eventually dries.
I have to say that we're ending this the way we started because Joseph de Maizière, for those of you who came in from the beginning, said perseverance and patience were the two P's of the UN, perseverance and patience.
I didn't hear that either, so
I
that's
know,
the
I
first
know,
time.
I know. Nobody told you, but there you go. So we thank you so much. This has been a wonderful,
Thank you.
wonderful program. And for everybody, please take a look at the show notes. You know that we are here for you. This is Jeanette. Never stop making a change in the world.